Some only visible in darkness.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, incidentally enough. And my very special guest today is Jeff Woolwine. Is it Woolwine or Woolvine?
Yeah, sure.
It's Woolwine. it's Woolwine, like the German kind of thing, or Woolwine.
That's right. Yes, sir.
All right. Fantastic. Well, why don't you just give us a little bit of a breakdown just about who you are and what it is you do, and you can go for as long as you like while you explain that, however long the story is. That's what the show's all about, so go for your life.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having me. My name is Jeff Woolwine. I'm calling you out of Phoenix, Arizona, home of the famous Phoenix 1997 Phoenix Lights. And what I've done here in Phoenix, Arizona, I'm a native here of 44 years. And what I've done in here in Phoenix, Arizona is, in my opinion, I have successfully matched the Phoenix Lights, these UFOs that we see in the sky in Phoenix, Arizona, to the rock art on the mountains within the Valley of the Sun. And pretty much basically how I did that was, first of all, I didn't find UFOs kind of found me. I'm just someone who is just paying attention to the sky, and just looking up every once in a while. And I just started noticing strange things in the sky that really, to me, didn't make sense. I knew what a balloon was, I knew what an airplane was, I knew what a helicopter was, I knew what a flare looked like, but the things that I was seeing and recording here in Phoenix and was from what other people were seeing here in Phoenix just wasn't matching up. So I decided to do an investigation on this. And in 2004, about 10 years after the 1997 Phoenix Lights, I decided to go out there and actually start hunting these things down. Now, I started seeing UFOs a few years before that, but in 2004, I started seeing enough of them that it made up my mind that I had to go out and actually find out what it was. And so basically what I did, I studied UFOs a lot for many years before I started going out there and filming them. And I read everything from Roswell to, the Dead Sea Scrolls, everything to the Bible, to anything and everything that had to do with UFOs. And eventually I decided to go out there and hunt them down to find out, where they're at, where they're hanging out at, and actually what these things were. And so 2004, I remember this guy, he was out there filming the lights, he was making the news out here, and he was seeing the lights a lot out here in the city of Mesa. Now, Mesa is about east of Phoenix. It's around the Phoenix area, but they call it Mesa. And that's on the east side of this mountain that we call South Mountain. And so I decided to head out there in the summer of 2004. And I bought a camera, and I took all my investigation equipment with me, and I headed out there and trying to hunt down some lights. And it didn't take long. I got an apartment, and within about a week or so, my son and I, we saw some orange amber lights They just appeared softly in the sky. They must have been about 3 or 4 miles away and about 1,000 to 2,000 feet up. And they were going, they were kind of in a slanted position there within a mile radius of each other. And they were heading very slowly going west towards the mountain. And that was, you know, that was our very first real, you know, that we captured on film. You know, we were really ecstatic over that. It was great. You know, we got something on film, you know. And so the next couple nights we kept going out there. And I think that second night we might have seen something, but then the third night we didn't see anything. But I wanted to get somewhere high because, you know, there was a lot of obstacles out here in Phoenix. We got trees, we got buildings and things like that. So I wanted to get somewhere high. And I ended up finding, I went to Mesa Community College, and there's a football field out there with a big set of bleachers. And we climbed up on those bleachers, and they were really high up in the sky, and it was overlooking the whole city of Phoenix. And I was like, this is it, man. I'm going to sit up here, and we're going to capture some lights, and we're going to find out, you know, where they're coming from and what's going on. So the whole summer of 2004, my son and some friends, we went out to the bleacher there, and it was kind of funny because some nights, you know, there was a football game going on, and there was a whole crowd of people going all along, you know, the whole set of bleachers there. So me and my son and my friends, we wasn't looking at the game there. We didn't have our camera towards the game. We actually had our camera towards something else, watching something completely different. And it was pretty neat, too, because people would come up and ask us, hey, what are you doing? And I said, hey, you see those lights out there? And they were like, yeah, what is that? You know, I was like, I don't know. I said, that's what I'm doing, you know. I'm filming these things, you know. And it was pretty amazing. You know, one time I was out there really late at night, and the cops, they came up there and they ambushed us. We had about 4 or 5 cops run up on the bleachers there. It was about 12 o'clock at night. And he was like, they were like, what are you doing up here? What are you doing? And it was a good thing I had a camera phone at the time. I'd take some pictures of the lights, you know, with my camera. And I showed him the phone, and I was like, here, take a look at these pictures. And I said, this is what I'm filming out here. And when the cops were leaving, they were like, wow, did you see that? You know, that was really cool. You know, and they left me alone, so they knew what I was doing that whole summer. It was really neat. So the whole summer of 2004, man, we're catching these lights, and it's always seemed to be in the same spot, about maybe a mile, 2 miles away on the east side of South Mountain. And we're catching all these crazy formation lights. You know, we catch a string of them one night, and then the next night we catch like these what look like a lightning bolt formation. I mean, these orange, sparkling, like glistening, like, you know, orange amber lights, you know. They would come in really softly, you know, and they'd sit there, and now they're moving. They're not moving very fast, you know. They're moving very, very slow. When you speed up the tape, you can see them actually moving, you know, and seeing where they're going. And they're moving really slow. And then all of a sudden, they disappear. They pop in, they do a formation, they sit there for about 3 to 5 minutes, and then they slowly disappear one by one. And this was really fascinating. And, you know, I think the second or third month that we were out there, I was like, hey, you know, there's got to be other people seeing this, you know, because it's almost every night, you know, almost every night these lights are out there, you know. I mean, I can't be the only one watching this, you know. And so I called up the news media down here, and I was like, hey, is anybody reporting any lights? I said, because I'm out here filming these things, and it's going on crazy out here. And it took them a few more weeks before they finally contacted me. And when they did, I ended up doing about 4 news stories that summer of 2004. I think I hit almost every news station out here. I hit Channel 3, I hit Channel 5, I hit Channel 12. And the end result in that summer was I was seeing flares from an Air Force base about 150 miles away. And I'm like, this is crazy because these things are right here. You know, it's not 150 miles away. There's no airplanes dropping these things out. There's no parachutes. There's no smoke. You know, these lights are huge, and they're bright, and they're glistening, and there's no explanation for this, you know. And I'm like, this is crazy. And I remember, you know, reading on some of these old scrolls and some of these other UFO investigation cases out there over the past 30 years, I come to find out that these things really, really like mountains. It's like mountains seem to attract these things. So I remember one time I was watching television, and there was a Native American tour guide, and he was doing a tour on South Mountain. And one of the people that was doing the tour asked him. He was like, "Hey, this stick figure guy looks like he's looking up at something that he might have saw in the sky there." And the Native American was like, "Yes, you know, this is part. This could be one of our interpretations, you know, of our ancestors, that our ancestors saw these things in the sky and recorded them on the rocks." Well, after he said that, and after what I've witnessed and recorded for so many months, and I've seen my eyes for so many years, I was like, wait a minute, we have strange things in the sky, and now we have strange markings on the rocks out here. There's got to be a connection. So I ended up calling up this Native American, and his name was Dave Morris, and you can find him at the Pueblo Indian Art Museum out here in the city of Phoenix. He still works there today. And I called him up and I said, "Dave, I saw you on television, man. You did a great job up there on the mountain." I was like, can you take me up on the mountain and teach me the Pestilus? I said, "I'm making a documentary. I like to film this, you know, and I'm really fascinated about the Pestilus." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, sure, you know, I'll meet you up there." So we made a date and we went out there and we spent about 4 hours on that mountain. And he went over a lot of explanations, a lot of things on the rock art out here, on the petroglyphs. For instance, you know, the Ho'okam is a Pima Indian word for the people who went missing, because we don't know what happened to these people. These people just up and disappeared. I mean, even when me and you moved, I mean, we take our belongings with us, but yet these people didn't. They just up and vanished, like they were taken away somewhere. And when you ask the natives, you know, what Ho'okam means, it means the people who are missing, the people who got taken away, the people who are gone, you know. And investigating more of the rock art, you know, it just seemed like, you know, that these, what they were actually doing was recording, you know, what they saw, because they didn't have video cameras back then. They had stone boulders to record their sightings on, to tell their story, you know, to make sure, you know, that their story would be told for generations, upon generations. And that's exactly what they did. This rock art, it isn't graffiti or isn't just a story, but it's actually telling us, you know, our history. And that was the real key of it all. And one thing that I found really, really fascinating at the time, I really didn't understand it, you know, at that time, because, you know, I was still thinking, you know, wait a minute, you know, everybody thinks that the 1997 Phoenix Lights was this big shift that went over the city of Phoenix, you know, but yet we only find four, maybe five videos of this. And you would think that if a big shift went over the city of Phoenix, then everybody would get it on film, everybody would take a picture of it. But yet what we found on these 1997 Phoenix Lights is these lights were actually hanging around some mountains. All right, it was on the west side of South Mountain, in between the South Mountain and another mountain called Estrella. And Estrella means Star Mountain in Spanish. Isn't that interesting? So it's like we have Star Mountain to the west, and we have South Mountain here on the east. And these lights actually made a chain between South Mountain and the Estrella Mountains. And that's pretty much, you know, what had happened. We had a long string of lights out there. And a few people saw them, a few people got, you know, videos of them, and next thing you know, the story just got way out of proportion, in my opinion. You know, investigating the story, investigating the lights, you know, talking to people who saw the lights, that, you know, because I missed it. I didn't see the lights in 1997. I can only go with what I was seeing, you know, in 2004. And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, how can a big spaceship, you know, because get into these, because he's telling me that these spirals are actually doorways for these spirits, for, you know, these things, you know. And I'm thinking at that time, I'm thinking to myself, well, how can a big spaceship, you know, get into this little spiral here, you know? And he was going on telling me that the spirals are sometimes next to a big crack in that rock, or if the spiral ends downwards, That means the sacred area is here on the ground area. That whole land right here where we're standing is the sacred spot. But if the spiral ends above, like spiral ends on top, then the sacred spot is in the sky. And this is when we see these things just magically like appear in the sky, like V-cloak or come in from another dimension or a doorway, if you will. And that's pretty much what these spirals represent up here on South Mountain, is a doorway for, in my opinion, these spirit beings. Now, we also have giants out here. There's a lot of rock art depicting giants. And, you know, going out there on South Mountain, investigating, you know, the rock art and investigating the scenery out there and the layout, you know, I've found some tombs out there that, you know, clearly, because they didn't have, you know, big machinery to move these huge boulders in place, you know, to cover up, to seal up the doors to these tombs. But yet I find these huge stone slabs that have been broken up and picked up and then tossed down into this canyon to conceal a door, you know. And, you know, one of the stories that Dave was telling me, we have out here more towards the west, out past Mesa, or I'm sorry, east, past Mesa, we have the mountains called the Superstition Mountains, and everybody's familiar with the Lost Dutchman's Mine, but there's more to that mountain than the Lost Dutchman's gold mine. Apparently, according to Dave and according to the rock formation out there, when the giants were here on Earth, they were bloodthirsty human, you know, they wanted to eat humans, you know, they were flesh-hungry, you know, human-eating giants. And apparently, you know, this is when, you know, there was too much evil on the world, on the face of the earth. So, you know, this is when the Creator decided to cause a flood, you know, and start over again. So when he did, this water was rising, and the lead giant told his people to stand upon this rock. And he used his powers to move this rock up just a little bit more, and the water kept coming. So he used his power to raise the mountain up a little bit more, but the water kept coming. He did this about 5 or 6 times, and the water kept coming until he was finally out of his, he was finally out of breath, and he couldn't do it no more. And to immortalize his people, he decided to turn them to stone. And when he did, the water stopped. And to this day, you can see how high this mountain is, and you can see the layers upon layers on how the giant has moved this rock up. And you can actually see the giant formation that looks like giant formation rocks up on top of the ridge there of the whole Superstition Mountain. And you can also see the water line where the water stopped right before they reached the giant's feet. And on the bottom of the mountain there, you can see what looks like a formation of a big praying monk, somebody on their hands and knees, and he's praying to this mountain. And I thought that story was pretty, you know, pretty amazing there. So there's a lot of superstition here. There's a lot of Native American background here, you know, that people have really, you know, has either forgotten or has covered up. Now back to these lights in the sky. Are you still there? Hello?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here, man.
Okay, buddy. Now, back to these lights in the sky. In 2004, well, you know, Dave was telling me all these pedagogues, and we got down at the base of the rock there, and I asked him about the Phoenix lights, you know, and he was like, oh, yeah, you know, there was somebody on the news, you know, about a week ago that was filming them. And I said, yeah, that was me. And he said, that was you? And I said, yeah, you know, I'm going on this theory that these lights, you know, Native Americans saw these lights too, and they carved them on the rocks out here. Well, he kind of agreed with me there, you know. And, you know, so in 2004, the end result was I'm seeing flares, and all the evidence and all the things that I'm reading, and everything is pointing towards this mountain. So I decided, well, you know what, in 2005, I'm going to go move to that mountain. I'm going to find me a place close to that mountain, and I'm going to see what I can see. You know, I'm going to see if anything gets past me, you know, I'm going to film it. And so basically what I did, I found a great lookout spot about a mile away from the east side of South Mountain, and perfect hangout, you know, perfect strategic spot to stake out this rock. And I did this for 2 years, and I was in my kitchen. I had my camera ready to go out the window, And if anything was going to get past me, it was because I was sleeping or I was in the bathroom. So I really staked out this rock for the longest time. And when I did, oh my goodness, I had seen a lot of crazy things. It didn't take long, maybe a few days, maybe a week, but I'm watching that mountain, and sure enough, here's like this little black orb. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning, and it just appeared right over there on the east side of South Mountain, and it ascends down on the mountain, and it disappears. And I'm like, wow, holy cow. And about a half an hour to 45 minutes later, about a mile or two down from the mountain going west, three leave, and they ascend up into the sky. Well, you know, I was like, man, that was crazy. You know, let's go out there and investigate where that thing went down at. So I went out there the next day to investigate, and sure enough, what did I find? I found a huge boulder with a stick figure guy looking up at the exact same thing that what I filmed in the sky the day before. Not only that, but I found spirals representing doorways. Now, the east side of South Mountain is a lot older than the west side. When you examine the mountain out there, you can actually see, you know, on how it's older, you know, and how the landscape changes as you hike through it. You know, it just, the landscape changes. And there's like 70% of the spirals up there represent a doorway. And the rest are spirals for water. And we can understand what the spirals for water is from one is the weathering on the rock. You know, there's a lot of weathering from water on the rock. And then we have a spiral, which looks like a teardrop coming out of the spiral. Okay, now that's a water marker. But when we have a spiral going clockwise, counterclockwise, or backwards, ending up or down, that's a doorway. You know, this is a doorway for these things. You know, the more and more I started seeing them, you know, it just didn't look like a spaceship to me. You know, there was no structure to it. There was no noise. There was no shadows on the ground. You know, I mean, these things just magically appeared in the sky, and then they went down the notch, and then it disappeared. You know, and it was kind of neat, too, because when they ascended on the mountain, they were solid, and then when they started to go down, I can really understand how the Native Americans call these things spirits. Because they kind of look like a spirit when they were going down. You can kind of see through them, you know. And then they kind of dissolve themselves into the rock, you know. They just like dissolve themselves into the rock. I can't explain it, but they went into the stone somehow, and they left from the stone somehow. When I witnessed that, you know, it brought me back to Dave. Dave was telling me, yeah, these are doorways. You know, and I was like, holy cow, man, it's all correct. This is all right, you know. And the more and more I went out there and investigated South Mountain, the more and more I found these spirals. And it was telling a story. It was telling us what had happened there. You know, either something coming out of the spiral, something being seen in the sky, or something, you know, with the giants, or something very magical happened there. You know, and it wasn't just a legend. It wasn't just a story. You know, and I think that it's actually true. All the evidence that I found out there, you know, in my conclusion, doing this investigation for 10, 15 years now, you know, I can honestly say that the Native Americans were right. You know, the spirals out there are doorways, are openings for these creatures. And I call them creatures now because when you look at some of my videos, you know, it's not a spaceship. What we're looking at here is not a spaceship. When we examine Mexico, we have the pyramids out there and all the sacrifice, and we come to Quetzalcoatl, the flying serpent. Okay, well, it's the same thing out here in Phoenix, Arizona. We have the flying serpent, and I have filmed that guy and many of his brothers, I guess you could say, but I filmed many of these flying serpents in the sky there. And I've actually seen, you know, petroglyphs with flying serpents over these people's heads depicted on the rock. Now, one thing that was really interesting that I found, this petroglyph was a flying serpent guy was depicted up into the sky. And below him was a guy with four arms, and he had his magical staff weapon. And you can find these photographs on my Facebook page, Jeff Woolwine at Petroglyphs from the Sky. And you can also find some more photographs of my work on Flickr.com on the Internet. And you can see this one panel where this guy is holding the staff, and it looks like he's shooting at this thing in the sky. Now, he's got four arms on him. And when we studied the Vyamatis, the Vyamatis, the India tribe, the India, we find all these elephants and all these animals, and they have all these weird-looking arms. You know, sometimes we see demons, you know, with 4, 5, 8, 10, 12 arms. Well, that seemed to be the story down here also. It was like, you know, they kind of went to war with these things, you know, in the sky there. And it was that was something that that really kind of amazed me, because I didn't only find that rock art depicting that. I also depicted, you know, others too with these magical staff weapons, I like to call them. And the story in India is that that there was good and evil, you know, that they were actually fighting over us, these good aliens, if you will, and the bad aliens, if you will. And they actually buried their, when they were all over with, they actually buried their magical staff weapons because they knew eventually they're going to come back and have to use them again someday. So it's supposed to happen again.
Now,
and,
Jeff,
you know, of course,
I'm going to have to stop you right there because we're just coming quickly to a break, and you can continue right on after it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want to make a donation or start up a regular $5 a month subscription, you can go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, or you can check out our sponsors, the High Tea Cafe in New Lynn, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga, or Blue Shield to help protect yourself from nasty EMF radiation sources that basically we're all bathing in. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Jeff, if you've got any websites or anything you'd like to plug, just quickly do that and keep talking about the staff and the war with the multi-armed people and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, sure. You can find me on Facebook. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me right now is on Facebook at Jeff Woolwine, Petroglyphs from the Sky. And when you search my name and search pictures on the internet, I posted photographs of this rock art and some of the tombs that I found out there. And but the best way to get a hold of me for right now is the Facebook page, Jeff Woolwine, Petroglyphs in the Sky. And back to the topic, they said that they eventually would have to come back and use these weapons. So basically, you know, it was the same story that I found out here on South Mountain that I, you know, kind of found not only there, but, you know, like all over the world. It was like the same type of story. It was just, you know, interpreted a little bit, you know, it was told a little bit different, but it was the same story, you know, all over the world, you know, like how civilizations up and disappeared, you know, the Mayans and the Aztecs, you know, I mean, some of them, they just up and disappeared, you know, without no trace, and just vanished. You know, and the archaeologist wants us to tell, they want us to believe, well, it was drought here and it got too hot, and so they migrated somewhere else. Okay, if that's true, where did they go? You know, they simply vanished, all right? They're gone. You know, even when me and you move, we take our belongings with us, but yet these people just up and vanished and left everything behind, you know? And I thought that was very interesting. That was, you know, kind of weird, you know, what happened to these people? And it's the same story all over the world. You know, some tribes, they were just gone, just vanished from the face of the earth with no trace where they went. You know, so not only is South Mountain the same story, but all over the world. And so the more and more I started studying these things, you know, I came to believe that it's not a creature out here. It's not a spaceship. It's not technology that we're seeing out here. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't a possibility that there's spaceships and little green men from Mars, you know, because, you know, scientists have already found, you know, three Earth-like planets, you know, that could support maybe human life, you know, but, you know, what to say. Maybe those guys are coming over and visiting with us. But from what I'm seeing over here and from what I'm seeing, you know, and other people are seeing all over the world, we're seeing orbs. We're seeing flying serpents. You know, we're seeing lights. You know, that's the main thing right now. Everybody's reporting. Everyone's seeing lights right now. And the thing of it is, the thing that's really starting to bother me now is everyone is thinking that these lights is an invisible craft that we can only see the lights. You know, that we can't see the craft at all. It's close, but we can see the lights. But investigating them and witnessing these things firsthand, I can honestly say that each light is the being, is the UFO, is the creature. We have, if you see 5-6 lights out there, it's not a spaceship cloak and you can only see the light. Man, that's 5 creatures, bro. That is 5 living beings that we're seeing out there. And they're conscious and they're alive and they know who's looking at them and who's not looking at them. And this is how they're getting away with being in our skies without no one really noticing them. Because if you're not looking for them, you know, you're not going to see them unless you just happen to look that way and say, oh, what's that light? You know? And that seems to be the case here, you know, because I'm not seeing a spacecraft, and it's really neat because they don't cast a shadow. I thought that was really fascinating. I've had so many of them, you know, fly right over my head, and the sun should be casting shadows, but it doesn't. You know, there is no shadows, you know. And, you know, one thing, you know, I had thought, you know, I was, you know, back in 2004, I'm like, well, is anybody else seeing them? Well, yeah, someone else was watching them too, man. They were watching them a lot longer than me there, let me tell you what. Let me tell you what happened. In 2004, I'm going out to Mesa Community College, and I'm watching these lights. I'm going up on the bleachers. And as soon as I made that news report, you know, I started seeing little white airplanes, okay? And they would follow me, my son and my friend, from my apartment all the way to the college there, and they would watch us get all hooked up, get our cameras all ready to go, and then they would climb high, you know, about 2,000-3,000 feet up in the sky, and they would circle, and they would wait for these lights to appear. And when the lights appeared, they zoomed down and out after them. And let me tell you, they weren't there to investigate them. They weren't there to check them out. They were there to chase them away. And most of the time, it worked. When the airplanes got real close to these lights, the lights would disappear. The airplanes would come in and circle that area for about 5-10 minutes. Airplanes would leave. And then all of a sudden, these lights would appear right back. And it was basically a cat and mouse game through the whole summer of 2004. And when the lights were over with and when I was done filming, you know, the airplanes would follow me home. You know, and then when I got to the mountain in 2005, I mean, I was still seeing the airplanes, but it got a little deeper. Now I'm seeing black helicopters. Okay, the black helicopters are hanging around that mountain. And, you know, people are going about their daily business. You know, we got houses right up to that mountain where people live. The civilization is right next to that mountain. You know, but nobody else is really watching, paying attention, because they're all doing their own thing. They're going to work, going to school, going to grocery shop, and they don't know. You know, but here's this little black helicopter. And what is he doing out there, man? He is watching one of the doors. And I think it's really, I think it's neat because they have, in my opinion, in watching these helicopters, it's like they know. They know when something's going to happen. It's like this helicopter one time came in, I filmed him, and he circled or he stayed stationary right over that mountain. And then as soon as he left, about 5-10 minutes later, a UFO would leave that area right there. It was great. So I'm thinking, you know, they have some kind of technology that, you know, the government or whoever's watching them. And I think whenever the door starts to open up, it produces, you know, like some kind of, I think it comes up on infrared, you know, and that's when the helicopters know that something's going to happen. You know, it's something, the energy starts to build right there. And that's basically what these things are after. Because South Mountain and all these mountains out here were built by fault lines. And that seems to be the attraction, is these UFOs is actually attracted to energy. And in 2005, that area where I was filming them at just so happened to be a major electrical power plant. And they were actually hovering over this electrical power plant there. And doing more investigations on South Mountain, you know, I found an old map. And it documented on where all the Holocom, you know, villages were. And right there, back in their day, where this power plant stands today, was their main spot. That was the main city for the Holocom, is where that power plant sits today. And is it a coincidence that those lights are hanging over that spot right now? I don't think so. Because in my opinion, these things are sucking up the energy. They're using their energy maybe as a food source, maybe as an intergalactic gas station, who knows? But the energy there from the fault line that the fault lines create attracts these things.
I've interviewed a number of people, and they said that there's certain points around the Earth that can be used as portals, stargates, in order to travel instantaneously from one location to the other.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Some people will call them ley lines. You know, they're portholes. You know, they're spiral doorways, you know, for these things to come and go, you know. And one of the things I really found fascinating with the rock art out there is the Indians, they told us, man, they told us what to look for, when it's going to be here, when it's not going to be here. And they did everything by the rock, the sun, and the shadow. You know, when you look at the petroglyphs, you're not just supposed to look at that one little picture on the rock. You're supposed to look at the whole landscape, right? Because that rock is talking about, that petroglyph is talking about the whole landscape, okay? And what I found up there, there's many spots on South Mountain where you find a huge boulder, and it's sitting in a position that when the sun gets in the right position and they place a boulder on top and they carve a spiral in the middle during the winter or during the solstice in the equinox, the sun will cast a shadow and will cut a pyramid shadow through this pyramid, and it lasts about 45 minutes. It's either cutting into the pyramid or it's coming out of the pyramid. And there's other carvings around these spirals, and you know, the archaeologists like to call them anthropomorphs because they're like half animal, you know, half human, or they're just weird looking things, right? And that's what we're seeing in the sky, is weird looking things, and that's what was carved on the mountains out here. So basically, they're telling us when to see these things and when not to see these things. The archaeologist wants us to believe that these light and shadow effects is the time to, is telling the Native Americans when it's time to make their harvest, when it's time to plant corn. You know, but when you look at a broader picture of this, when you open your mind to this, and you actually see these things in the sky and what they do, you know, it's not telling us that it's time to plant corn. It's telling us when it's time to see these things, you know. And it was neat because when I was sitting out there in 2005 videotaping these things out my kitchen window, I was positioned in the exact same position of the mountain. And so what I did is I used the sun and the little marker I had, you know, on my window to cast a shadow on my kitchen floor. And basically what I did is I marked every time I saw a UFO. That month I saw a UFO. This month I saw a UFO. That month I didn't see a UFO. That month I didn't see a UFO. Wait a minute. This month I saw a UFO. And I marked the whole year, you know, the whole year on my kitchen floor due to the tracking of the sun. And that's exactly what the Holocom did. And it was right, you know, it was right. This is how they tracked them. And this has been going on way before 1997. This has been going on, in my opinion, at least 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years. And it's just repeating itself. It's been going on this whole time. And, you know, because people go up there on the mountain all the time and they're like, well, I didn't see a UFO. You know, well, what time did you go up there? What month was it? You know, things like this. You know, you really have to understand these things. You know, you really have to understand the sun, because when the sun gets in the right position of the fault line, it acts like a doorway for these things. You see what I'm saying? It opens up the energy.
But it happens at a certain time, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When the sun is in the right position, you know. So
Can I expand on that? Because in New Zealand, we have a researcher named Martin Dutre who's stayed with a lot of the Maori elders here who've been in this land for a very, very long time. In fact, dating back to the Great Flood. And they also have an awful lot of these sites around New Zealand that actually do track exact sunrises and exact sunsets at certain times of year. Right. Could they be used for this purpose that you're talking about as well?
Yes, I believe it is. I believe that this is, you know, even Stonehenge, you know, it's tracking the summer solstice and the, you know, the equinox and everything. It's like a sundial, but it's actually telling us when to see these things in the sky, when these things are going to be here. Okay, like, for instance, this is what I found out. And the only way to do it, the only way I learned, was to sit there for 2.5 years and actually follow the sun, find out when they're here, and track the light and shadow markers. And that's what I did. And what I learned was, like, the first, like, right before we get to an equinox or a solstice, okay, like a month before or a few weeks before, all we're going to see in the sky is, like, white orbs, maybe black orbs. Okay, and then the solstice comes around, we won't see them anymore. And then a week or two after that, about 4 or 5 days later, then that's when they start to come back. And between the equinox and the solstice, in between these months, they get a little closer, a little closer, a little closer, a little closer, until by the time we're in between the solstice and the equinox, holy cow, they're landing in our backyard. We can actually see what they're looking like. They're coming and going from that mountain like it's crazy. But when it gets closer to an equinox or closer back to a solstice, they slowly but surely start to disappear. And it's also seen, when you look at my videos, it's always seemed to be around the same time. You know, the best time to see these things, you know, is like in the mornings, you know, sometimes around noon time. But like the best time to see them is between like 4 o'clock in the afternoon to about 8 or 9 o'clock, you know, in this area, in the sacred spot area. You see, in the area where the spiral is, you know, where the doorway is. And that's how I tracked them. That's how I was able to see them. You know, I knew what time because it was repeating itself. You know, the first year it was like, oh, okay, that was me. The second year it happened, you know, the exact same way, except there was more of them. I was like, man, that's it. You know, that's it. This is how to track these things. This is, you know, I found out where to look, what to look for, you know, and how to see them, you know, and it had everything to do with the position of the sun. This is the reason why sometimes we see UFOs on one mountain, and then sometimes we see UFOs on a different mountain. You know, basically what they're doing is they're following the sun. They're following the fault lines. They're following the energy. They're jumping from mountain to mountain to mountain. You know, they're always following that sun for the energy, you know. And I thought that was kind of fascinating.
What do you think? They're like kind of sun worshippers or something like that?
Well, you know, they absorb the energy, you know, that's for sure. And these things they're shape-shifters. You know, they like to take the shape of animals. You know, they like to take the shape of humans. You know, that's what the rock art depicts. You know, and in some of my videos, you actually see a flying serpent out there. It looks like a snake, you know. And so basically, I mean, the Holocom, the Mayans and the Holocom interacted together. They were both down here at the same time. The archaeologists won't agree on this, but the rock art clearly shows this, that the Mayans were here along with the Holocom and along with the sacrifice. Now, the Holocom, they didn't worship the sun, but, you know, they feared that the sun was a tyrant god, all right? And I believe that they actually, you know, performed sacrifice for these lights, to these lights. The Holocom wasn't a war tribe. They didn't make war with anybody. But yet they were sacrificing their children and people that they took prisoner, you know, for theft or whatnot, you know, for these lights. And I don't think that, excuse me, I don't think that these things were actually, well, I lost my point, but anyway, one thing that I learned, that these things, you know, what took these people away? What happened to these people? They up and disappeared. Well, when we look at the rock art, you know, it actually shows a flying serpent or an orb, you know, picking a guy up by his head and taking him away. And, you know, that's something that it was like maybe, you know, when we read First Thessalonians, you know, in the Bible, everybody's talking about this rapture, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe, you know, this was like a type of rapture for the holocom, you know, because I could see all these things in the sky, and then all of a sudden being caught up by these things and taken up and carried away. So was that a type of rapture for them back in the end of the day? That could be, you know. What I think these things are, in my personal opinion, I think we have to go back to Genesis 6 when it talks about the Nephilim on how they were cast down. Okay, they were cast down onto earth. All right, and I think it's fascinating that we read, you know, we read the book of Genesis, and then we go out there on the rocks, and we see the exact same story. You know, it's fascinating. Genesis 6, we can read, and then we go up on the rocks, and we can see the photographs. We can see the pictures of what the Bible was talking about, because it talks about the giants. It talks about sacrifice. It talks about, you know, how mankind at the time, you know, pretty much, you know, worship these things, you know, pretty much as gods. And then sometimes they would actually interact with these things, you know, and maybe this is where the giants came from. Because clearly they're depicting giants out here, and clearly there's rock art or there's rock formations, big boulders, you know, that look like they've been picked up and thrown, you know, to conceal some of these tombs out here that I found that the archaeologists don't want to talk about. But, yeah, you know, to me, it proves that, you know, that that Genesis 6 from the Bible and the giants were actually, you know, it was possibly here. You know, they were actually here along with these things in the sky. You know, so these things have always been here. You know, I think it's just fascinating on how people are looking for another life form, you know, out in space when the whole time they've been in our backyard. You know, just like the oceanographers are finding new species of life beneath the ocean, well, this is a new species of life above the ocean that has always been here. But they're so quiet, they're so, you know, they don't like to really present themselves unless things are really escalating in the world, like now. It's like every time, like, you know, Iran, Iraq, Jerusalem, things like this, you know, when wars are breaking out, that's the time to see these things. These things really come out. And things are really escalating now in the world right now. And we should expect to see a lot of UFOs. And we are, you know, we are seeing a lot of UFOs right now. And we will continue to see a lot of UFOs until the Earth, you know, starts to quiet down a little bit. You know, in 2004, we're having that Gulf War, and holy cow, man, those things were having a heyday out here. And as soon as the Gulf War was over with, and things started to quiet down, that's when the lights started to quiet down also. You know, they were still here, but not as many of them, you see? So I just think that it has a lot to do with Genesis 6. And, you know, when we read the Bible and we just take religion out of it, and we read, you know, some of the good parts, you know, for instance, Moses, you know, when he's leading his people out of Egypt, the pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, you know, they follow this thing in the sky. When we read the book of Numbers, it says that sometimes this thing in the sky would sit there for a whole year, and they would pitch their tent. And they'd stay there and watch this thing for a year until it started moving again, okay? So basically, in my opinion, that whole 40 years of walking around in the desert, they're following a UFO, you know? And who was it that brought the people into the promised land? It wasn't Moses. Moses was taken away by a light on the mountain. It was something in the sky that let these people into the promised land, you know, just like with Jesus Christ, you know? And the people, you know, coming to see the newborn king. They said they followed a star. You know, scientists want to say, well, that was Jupiter now. We can say that's Jupiter. But what if it was one of those things? You know, what if it was one of those UFOs that they were following in the sky? You know? So I think what we have here is, you know, we have some good ones and then we have some bad ones. And I think the Creator is actually, you know, showing me. I know that he's showing me these things for a reason, you know, because I'm seeing them. And you know, look and you shall find. And that's pretty much what I did, you know. I found it, and it's there. And, any other questions? I don't know.
You know, the funny thing is, I basically didn't even ask any questions. He just wind you up and let you go, mate. It was awesome.
Yeah, Yeah, there's a lot to go over, right? I'm coming out with my book. Hopefully, it's supposed to...
Can I interrupt you, actually? We're coming up to the end of this second segment. I said I'd have you on for an hour. I'm just wondering if you want to do a second hour, if you've got more to say.
You know, I could go on for days about this subject, but yeah, sure, I could do another hour.
Okay, well, we'll take that as a yes. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on the vinnieeastwoodshow.com. And, of course, bear in mind this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want to make sure that this broadcast keeps continuing. So, basically, we're just more or less a free-for-all platform for people of all sorts of topics and this year, even stuff that I don't agree with, I allow on my show kind of thing. I'm weird like that. I don't know why I do it. Maybe it's because I'm purposely trying to undermine my own credibility because I want to be known as somebody who's absolutely incredible. I don't know why, but I do it anyway because, it's fun. All right, we'll be right back.